back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore. At Baltimore Positive, we certainly hope that everybody is finding their way to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We were Nacho Mamas on Friday. I literally just had the remnant of the Scunny's crab cake. It goes perfect with an ice-cold draft beer. And even better, after a Ravens victory. We'll have a little Ravens victory party with our mayor, Brandon Scott, at Coco's this week, the legendary Coco's crab cake on Friday. All of it powered up by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. And number eight let himself play out in Denver in the Mile High City. I guess the altitude and the thin air led to increased passing yards for Lamar Jackson in a pretty impressive victory, Luke. It wasn't a rock'em sock'em, we're going to beat Miami 55-10 or whatever, you know, those kinds of victories they had 2 years ago. But given the cast of characters, given Villanueva, you know, off the field, how much harassment there's been of Lamar about passing, his back hurting, and him clearly not wanting to run 15 times, you know, I give them high grades. I give it big style points for me. I thought it was a very impressive victory.
Yeah, I mean, how about the fact that they won a game on the road by 16 points and the running game was not really a factor? I mean, Denver, we talked about it a lot going into this game, the 3-0 facing teams that hadn't won a game. So there was that sense of, all right, they're good. They've won double-digit games and they look like they have some promise. Teddy Bridgewater's off to a good start. You know, that defense has been good for a couple years now. It's just been their offense lagging behind. But there was that sense of unknown. Very clearly, the Vic Fangio defense was committed to stopping the Ravens' run. And we saw very little traction, very little explosiveness from the Ravens' running backs. No problem. Lamar Jackson throws for 316 yards, taking shots down the field, being aggressive, and it continues to work. And it's working well. And it's one thing to do it against Detroit or Kansas City, teams that were among the bottom in most defensive categories. But this is a Denver defense, albeit with some injuries. And the Ravens don't need to hear anyone else talking about injuries. Let's be clear on that. But they were very productive, and we saw Marquise Brown make a highlight touchdown. We saw James Prochet involved. We saw Devin Duvernay involved. Mark Andrews and Sammy Watkins, of course. This was a very nice win. And you know, you mentioned the blowout in Miami, and we think of 2 years ago the way they just completely steamrolled teams. That's rare in the NFL. I mean, you just don't see that a whole lot. Typically, really good to great teams win games like this on the road, where it's not necessarily dominant on the scoreboard. You're not hanging 50 on them, but the Ravens were in control of that football game throughout. And
they wasted the first quarter was sort of like nothing.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, literally. I mean, that's they didn't put the gas down until the second quarter, and they're sort of feeling their way to some degree. There were some timing issues early in the game.
Sure, sure. And I said control throughout from the second quarter on. I mean, it was a dominant second quarter. And then in the second half, they didn't have to do a whole lot other than play really good defense against what was a backup quarterback at that point. And you know, can you make an argument that Teddy Bridgewater pulls a Jared Goff and has a better second half than the first half, like we saw in Detroit last week? Maybe. I can tell you this. When I saw Drew Lock taking the field, I thought the game was over at that point because Drew Lock can't play. I think it's clear. You draft him. Yeah, you draft him in the second round a couple years ago, and then you bring in Teddy Bridgewater to replace him as the starter a couple years later. So from that standpoint, heck of a lot of credit for the Ravens defense, which pressured Teddy Bridgewater in the first half, pressured Drew Lock in the second half, gave up a few runs here and there, but it's not as though Denver could take over with their running game because the Ravens took a sizable lead in the second quarter. And then, like I said, on the offensive side of the ball, a game that, you know, woulda, coulda, might have been the end of their 100-yard rushing streak that suddenly everyone cares about so much that you run a meaningless play at the very end of the game. That aside, it was their passing game, and it was Lamar Jackson and their wide receivers making plays and converting third downs. And move was shaky at times, but overall it held up okay. You know, it wasn't a case where Lamar Jackson's running for his life all afternoon like you're thinking is possible with Vaughn Miller and that Denver front going into this game. So a game that you're really happy to win. You look at this team after losing the overtime game in week one, knowing that two of your next three were on the road. That home game was against Kansas City, and you win three straight. And now you come home and you play four straight at home with your bye mixed in there. The next time the Ravens are on the road, Nestor, 2 weeks before clock.
I'll be tired
turn the calendar to October.
Yeah,
you gotta like that.
I'll be done with pumpkin spice and apple cider donuts and all of that stuff. But it really is kind of an amazing schedule that they've made it through this tough part, and especially trying to get their sea legs about who's going to be their left tackle, who's going to be their right tackle, who's going to catch the ball, who's going to run the ball, as we see Le'Veon Bell brought up. And I know, Dennis, I'm wearing my Coons Ford Security Boulevard shirt. Dennis will tell you how happy he is about Le'Veon Bell at 3 o'clock on Thursday, as well before the game. But it is quite a cast of characters, and you know, Harbaugh's a hell of a coach. I take nothing away from him on any of this to say where this team is and where neophyte teams would be and where teams that piss down their leg are when they lose three running backs in a week and they lose their left tackle and they can't get their fullback onto the field and they can't get their first round wide receiver onto the field. And you mentioned like Devin Duvernay, Prochet, all these names that we hear in April. We hear bandied about a little bit in August if you watch the preseason games, and then they go away, sort of. It's nice to see Tyus Bowser at a podium, right? It's nice to see guys that are homegrown, Mark Andrews being a great example of that, and he got paid and all that, but guys that aren't just the first-round guys, because Hollywood Brown's supposed to go catch that ball. That's why he was a first-round draft pick. But I think the rest of these guys playing their way into this, getting themselves onto the field, whether it's Averett, Stevens, any of these guys, were there mistakes? Sure. Were they beaten at times? Sure. Were there penalties? Sure. But getting those guys out there, when you win, get on a plane, maybe a little winded, you feel good, you come home, you may kick yourself in the ass a little bit on the plane ride home because you didn't play well personally or didn't feel like you made every play. But everybody on the plane got to win. You come home. You're in a great position. I can't fathom, dude, that 4 weeks ago, not just after the Vegas game where they lost, and they, you know, they had that game won two or three times, right? So a little bit of an aberration, bad luck. But at that point, they felt jinxed, given all the injuries, given all the bad stuff that was going on, as to where it was going to Vegas. Forget that they lost. Just the vibe about the team when the season began. If I would have clapped my hands and said, dude, it's first week of October. You're coming home. You get an extra day of sleep for a lousy Colts team, by the way, that we thought might have been better. And you're going to be 3-1. Wouldn't have mattered. I'm wearing the red Coons Ford shirt. And I know my friends at Wise Markets, their logo is red. You would have thought it was the Chiefs they would have lost to, right? You would have said, well, they're going to lose to the Chiefs. They'll win these. They'll be 3-0 on the road, blah, 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 blah. They beat the Chiefs. I mean, I don't know what they haven't done at the quarter pole other than pissing that game away in Vegas now, right, which they did twice. They had 30 seconds left to go in that game, and they had that game won. I don't know what is going to be left for them except holding serve. They better not lose it home to the Chargers, and they're good. The Bengals are better. They'll come in, you know, then they'll get the bye week. They get all of this home cooking going on for a while. They're in a really nice position for being depleted dramatically of their initial talent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And but we talked about it before the season, even before the injuries and this crisis and feeling like they're, you know, snake bitten when it comes to injuries and losing week one and thinking you're going to be 0-2 with Kansas City coming to town. And let's face it, very, very, very few people had any confidence about that one. I didn't have much confidence in that one. I picked Kansas City. I'll own that. I'm not going to shy away from that. But you look at that and understanding that and understanding we've talked about it, a play away from winning week one, but a play away from losing week two, a play away from losing week three. I mean, they could have been
play away from
you know?
Week three. Week three is miraculous. It took the greatest kick in the history of the game.
You know, but that's what I'm saying.
Games, you're not supposed to win games when you have to kick 66-yard field goals. You know why? No one in the history of the game's ever done it. So, I mean, they've teetered. But this was a pull away. This sure was one of those ones where, honestly, I picked them to win before the game. but I thought they were going to lose. I think as comprised, have we seen this roster and talked about this roster all summer that we're going to be relying on Latavius Murray, like down the line, if we had talked about the team in this fashion without Ronnie Stanley, without Villanueva now, which is what we're talking about, if we were talking about this team, we wouldn't be in love with this football team.
No, I think that's completely fair. And Denver had injuries too, and they lost some guys over the course of that game. But you know, you just see it, what they're lacking. You see who's running the football at this point. I mean, let's face it, you're not seeing a lot of explosiveness from Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman and Tyson Williams, who was, you know, the toast of the town a couple weeks ago. He's a healthy scratch, which I think is interesting, but also speaks to how they're really trying to find this. And it's not just looking at the numbers. It's the mesh point. It's guys that are seeing the hole when it's there, or trying to get something out of nothing, which is happening quite a bit because your offensive line has been banged up and shuffled around, and you're trying to find that. And oh yeah, which has been the case the last couple of years. This isn't anything new, what Denver and Detroit did the last couple of weeks. They're facing a lot of 8-man boxes because teams are saying, we'll make Lamar Jackson throw the ball. Well, what's happening? They're making him throw the ball. And it's quite successful. And statistically, it should be even better than it looks right now, because there have been guys that have dropped the ball. Not as much on Sunday, but we talked about that all last week. So
well, he has rehearsed from a that long time to do this, right? Like, he came out of Louisville and he threw the football at Louisville, and nobody liked the way he threw it because he threw it like a slingshot. He still throws it a little bit like a slingshot. You know, he still doesn't have any timing with Le'Veon Bell in throwing a very, very simple swing pass to some degree because they haven't been out there. He didn't practice this week. Like, the kid's kind of amazing in that way, right? I mean, he really is, that he should be getting better at this. Even when Brian Billick comes on, who's pushing 70 years old and has done this for 40 years, and says, guys don't get better at this. They don't get better, you know, historically at throwing the ball down the field or throwing the ball outside the numbers or getting way better at reading. I mean, you and I would still sit here to this day and say Joe Flacco is confused by various versions of defensive formations, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to do. But this also goes, and we've talked about this a lot more so in the baseball space, growth mindset. You know, the idea that, and that's not just for a player, it's for coaches who are recognizing what their players do really well, what their players don't do so well, and which was the whole point of this experiment. And I don't say that to be disrespectful to Lamar Jackson, but the Ravens knew the offense they ran with Joe Flacco was not going to be what they did with Lamar Jackson, nor should it have been. That would have been dumb. And that's what coaches did for years with the likes of Michael Vick and you know, Robert Griffin III, and go back to Randall Cunningham. I mean, guys that had these special traits, and you know, RG3, I'm not going to put in the same category as the other two I just mentioned, but guys who had special traits, but teams that still tried to do the whole, you know, square peg into a round hole thing where
let's run the West Coast offense.
Embrace the way Lamar Jackson plays football and build an offense around it and do things that teams haven't done at the NFL level in a long time. And it's worked beautifully. And the whole point, and we talked about this 2 years ago after they lost to Tennessee in the playoffs, and we talked about this last year throughout the offseason, is you do need to evolve because teams are going to not, I hate the term, figure it out. Everyone knows what quarterbacks do well, what quarterbacks don't do so well. They even say that about Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady, there was a time in his career where he wasn't necessarily great throwing the ball on the outside very early on. Remember, they were a little more of a, not a game manager, but he wasn't throwing the ball 50 times a game.
That's why he was a six-round draft pick. He didn't go onto any field and light anybody up with his arm.
Not initially, no, but you saw that clearly New England recognized traits and he had a growth mindset, and they build a roster, build an offense. You bring in Randy Moss, that helps. You bring in Rob Gronkowski, that helps. And boom, the rest is history. And we're seeing him go up against his old team on Sunday night. But in the case of Lamar Jackson or any quarterback or any offense, as teams see you more, they will develop more best practices. They will develop ways to contain or discourage certain elements of your game or your offense, and then it's your job to adjust. We talk about that in baseball all the time. The prospect, you know, the rookie outfielder who can just crush a fastball. Well, first month or two in the majors, he might get away with that. And then what happens? Pitchers adjust, and then it's up to that rookie to adjust himself. So what we're seeing with the Ravens know, really, and it's not just this year, this has been an ongoing thing, is you want to continue to grow, you want to continue to evolve. And what's nice, and going back to what you said about Duvernay and James Prochet, I mean, guys that I've talked about a lot in the spring and the summer, and, you know, in the case of Duvernay, it was more so as a return man last year. Prochet, you know, he was barely on the field as a wide receiver last year. Now, and part of it is dictated by some injuries, because, you know, you've had Rashad Bateman, who hasn't been on the field yet, but these guys are making contributions, and that's a beautiful thing. And that's not to say that means that they're going to throw it 50 times a game now, but they're showing, like on Sunday, you go up against a defense that does a really nice job slowing your rushing attack. No problem. You throw the ball down the field. And even though Denver has a very talented secondary, they couldn't handle it. They couldn't stop the Ravens. And you know, you end up having a 23-7 win on the road. Okay, 23 points isn't insane from a statistical standpoint, but they were, from the second quarter on, they were in complete control of that game. And then it became much more complimentary. But I did find it interesting, not talking about the very last play, but on the previous drive, that you were still seeing the Ravens throw the football late. I thought that was very telling in the sense of, not that they were trying to pile on or run up the score or anything like that.
That's,
it was
how
a
they
case
felt
of,
like they could get
that's
the
what
sticks.
They were doing the bet.
Yeah.
Right. That's how they were being successful on Sunday. But that's a good thing. Now, in a big picture sense, do you want your running game to get on track and look a little more like the last couple of years? Of course. And that's going to be
a tackle that can play 2 weeks in a row.
Well, and that, there you go. I mean, that's what, again, that's what makes, to me, what makes Sunday feel so good. Not that it was this amazing 50-point win or anything like that, but they, you know, what has been their biggest strength over the last couple of years wasn't really there on Sunday with the run, and Denver took that away. Greg Roman, Lamar Jackson said, all right, no problem. We're going to throw the ball. We're going to push it down the field. And they did this against Detroit last week as well, except it didn't look as good because Marquise Brown drops a couple balls. This week, you don't see as much of that. You see him make an amazing catch. You see other receivers involved in converting some third downs, and you're able to control the clock and score points and sustain drives that way. It's a beautiful thing. We've talked about it. You know, the ultimate goal for this team is what? First of all, they have to get to the playoffs, and we understand all that. But this team, as we're defining the Lamar Jackson era now, is all about what they do in January. Well, here's an example. They couldn't run the ball all that well. And yeah, I know they don't have J.K. Dobbins. They don't have Gus Edwards, but those guys aren't coming back till next year. So you have to adjust. You have to figure it out. But here's a case where a really capable, good defense really bottled up their running game. No problem. They were able to throw the football, and they could throw it when they wanted to, and they threw it when they needed to in converting some big third downs and whatnot. So very encouraging in that way. And Lamar Jackson, you look at it, 22 of 37. Is that an elite completion percentage? No, but the way that he's pushing the ball down the field, when you look at the fact that he entered week four leading the league in yards per completion, he was seventh in yards per passing attempt. That shows you that they're not just throwing the ball, they're being aggressive throwing the ball. And naturally, you're not going to complete quite as many, but if you can be more explosive and you can get those big plays, I'll gladly take that over a guy who's going to complete, all right, 72% of his passes, but he's averaging 6 yards per attempt, which you've seen, you know, in some circles around the league. Look at Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh right now. He's not throwing the ball down the field whatsoever. So I'll gladly take the guy who might not be completing at quite as high of a rate, but it's far more explosive, far more productive. And we talked about it all along. Efficiency comes in different ways. It isn't just looking at the completion percentage. It's, you know, are you getting yards? You know, are you pushing the ball down the field? Or are you being productive with those throws? And Lamar Jackson is absolutely doing that through the first, I would say, quarter of the season. But what, I guess, you know, you throw that 17th game in, so we're not technically at the quarter mark, but basically we are. And you have to be very, very encouraged with what you're seeing in that regard.
Luke Jones joins us right now. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere the Ravens are this week in the extra day of preparation to get ready for the Indianapolis Colts on Monday night. And we finally get some home cooking here after a while and sit around and watch baseball all week at all hours of the day, and Red Sox and Yankees and Yankees and Red Sox, and figuring all that stuff out. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. The Justin Tucker Palooza thing last week, kicked a couple field goals, didn't get the chance to kick the 70-yarder. Luke, I want to circle back to the wide receivers because Eric DaCosta had a great WWE little skit that he did with his press conference. He was so insulted that you would even mention, we've drafted James Prochet. We've drafted the great Devin Duvernay. We have plans for these young men in this offense. Then he signed Sammy Watkins the next day, and they go and they draft Rashad Bateman. But as it turns out, when you do draft these guys, you do envision a game in Denver where they catch a big ball at some point. When their name comes off, you think at some point they're going to contribute, no matter when, at what point that is. And especially for young players at that position in this offense where we haven't passed it much lately, for those guys to have a little coming out party, that's probably a little special plane ride home for those two cats specifically.
No question about it. And it really speaks to Eric DaCosta, what he said, and then what they ultimately did. The truth was somewhere in the middle. They weren't writing off James Prochet and Devin Duvernay. At the same time, you're not going to put all your eggs in those baskets and just say, oh, we're done. We're wiping our hands and we're going to hope for the best from a third round pick and a sixth round pick from a year ago. No, you don't do it that way. And it's the same way that you want to attack any position group. You want to have depth. You want to have options. You want to have outs. You know that every draft pick that you look to, many of them are going to fail, but you know some of them are going to succeed. And you know that there are guys who are going to be a stud from day one, like it's looking like Adafe Owe is going to be. But you also know that there are guys like a Tyus Bowser, who was a second round pick and 2.5 years in looked like he was kind of a wasted second round pick. And he blossoms, he develops, and
or
he's not
Hollywood Brown, who's faster than anybody, flashes right away. Clearly, he's diminutive in his own way, gets injured, you write him off. Then he starts dropping balls, then he catches balls. Then he starts dropping balls again, and then he catches balls. And that's probably what's going to happen with him. He's going to drop balls, but he's going to catch balls. You just have to hope he catches some of them.
Yeah, and it speaks to the fact that, I mean, not everyone's Ray Lewis. Not everyone's Ed Reed. Not everyone's Jonathan Ogden. You don't have perfect players, right? I mean, you're going to have guys. Hey, you and I have bad days and good days. And there are days I lose my train of thought in the middle of whatever I'm talking about, or days where I remember stats really well, or I might have a really good analogy that I make. I mean, it's no different.
There are days when my show sucks, but it's still better than it's ever been. I'll tell you that right now.
But the point is, I mean, they're human beings just like anyone else. And I'm not saying that to make an excuse. When Marquise Brown goes out and drops multiple touchdowns, he flat out said it on Friday. It was unacceptable. I missed layups there. You know, I mean, that's the term he used. But I also like the fact that he flat out, you know, someone asked him about backlash on social media and he kind of laughed it off. He said, hey, if I was on my fantasy team and they dropped multiple touchdowns, I'd be a little ticked off too. But at the same time, social media, who cares? Who cares what Joe Schmo might say to, you know, something nasty about me because I dropped a touchdown.
He does have a good countenance about him in that way.
He does.
And being around the kid for a couple of years, and I haven't been around him in 2 years, I liked him in the early part. I thought all that Hollywood and all that with him, I found him to be a kind of a respectful, good-natured, kind of, you know, quiet kid. I mean, I pull for that kid.
Yeah,
and I don't pull for all of them. I don't pull for Marlon Humphrey. I'll tell you that. I met him too. But for the guys that in that locker room, he was one of those guys where I sort of saw the shine of him. And I see it even more now that he's failed. You know what I mean? He's failed, dusted off, and got back up. And, you know, I love that. I love that. I really do.
Yeah, and I mean, he had a terrible game. There's no question about it. He was the first to say that. But at the same time, I looked at what he did at the end of the regular season last year, what he did in two postseason games, albeit the second one being a loss. He was one of the few guys that you would say came to play that night. And then what he had done over the first couple games in 2021. It's a bad game. But the key is, do you make a bad game turn into a bad month, a bad season? And that's when things start to go off the rails and you wonder about a guy's confidence. But the fact that he comes right back and he catches a 49-yard touchdown, a beautiful throw and an even better catch. I mean, you see something like that and you say, you know what? Because of what you just mentioned, because of what I mentioned about how he handled it on Friday when he's at the podium, you get the sense that I think he's going to be all right. He's not going to let it snowball. And it snowballed for him a little bit midway through last year. There's no question about that. But again, these are young players and guys do not stay the same. You know, you always hear that, and Harbaugh cites this all the time. You're either getting better, you're not, or you're getting worse. You're not staying the same. And that's really more about a mindset than anything else. You know, it's not literally looking at your statistics every week and saying better or worse. It's, you know, are you continuing to put in the work? Are you making, not just saying practice makes perfect, but perfect practice makes perfect? Is the work ethic there? Are you studying? Are you watching film? Are you staying after practice to work with teammates if you need to iron something out? You know, it's all those different things. And he's a guy that, look, the last couple of years with the pandemic has really limited media access. So I don't want to speak as though I'm too much of an authority there, but by all accounts, works hard. He cares. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's incredibly talented despite his slight stature. And he bounced back in a big way on Sunday. And that's what you love to see. And with these other young guys, I mean, you know, look at Duvernay, a little shaky with some of the decision-making as a punt returner, but also reels off a nice long return and makes some plays as a receiver. So you know, you like seeing that. You like seeing a James Prochet who entered training camp absolutely on the bubble and did nothing but go out there and have rock solid day after day after day in the summer to earn a roster spot. And okay, didn't happen for him exactly the first couple of weeks of the season. And with Rashad Bateman coming back, I'm not necessarily going to expect James Prochet to have 74 receiving yards every week. But if the time, you know, if he's called upon because someone else is, needs a breather, someone else gets hurt, or if there just happens to be a menu of plays that really suits him well, then you have more confidence. And now he has more confidence because he hasn't just done it on the practice field. He's
well,
gone out
he's
and done
an
it
NFL
in the midst
player,
of,
right? Right? Sure. Literally, right? Not
sure,
a practice
sure.
squad
so,
guy. He's a guy that actually, when it's the James Prochet game, they'll talk about this game, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I go as far to say James Prochet game, but it's his first game where, yeah, I mean, he made multiple catches and looked good doing it, and he runs good routes, and he's another slot option for them. So, I mean, it's good. You want multiple guys involved, and you know that it, you can't look at it from a fantasy football standpoint and say, well, this guy's got to needs to have X number of catches for X number of yards and you know, a touchdown every other week. It's not going to happen that way, especially in an offense like this where you hope and they will need to get their running game more consistent. I think that's something that they're going to go back to the drawing board and try to figure this out. And in the meantime, you hope you know, Ronnie Stanley continues to rehab, no surgery at the moment. So you hope he's back over the next couple of weeks. We're going to have to see about that. Villanueva, John Harbaugh downplayed, I said it was more so soreness. He was on the injury report this week. So you know, you want to get those guys back and healthy. You want to get these running backs more comfortable and try to figure that out. I'm still confident they will figure out their running game, even if it's not a record-setting 2019 group. But in the meantime, you're winning football games, and you're seeing this passing game take major steps, not just Lamar Jackson, who's had big games in the past and has always been able to throw, maybe not in the conventional way that people want him to as traditional football fans, but he's getting the job done to a very high degree, and now you're seeing some of these young receivers come along and make plays, and that's only going to make this team better in the long term as you're getting deeper into the season and closer to January, knowing ultimately that's where legacy is going to be defined for Lamar Jackson in this current era of Ravens.
Running the ball so well, they had to run it on the last play. They get so hardball-ian, isn't it? We will absolutely be discussing that as we continue our conversation. All of our Wise conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. I want to give a shout out. I called it the Bell Haven sub last week. It's the Bell Garden sub. I've only had one, and it was delicious, so don't shoot me. I got to go get another one. But Rob Santoni's at Wise Markets. Also doing a whole bunch of stuff with schools this month and giving back to schools. So we'll be telling you more about that as the month opens up. My wife went to the Wise in Middle River before the game on Sunday, and she said, "It's crazy in here. It's like it's going to snow or something." I'm like, "It's a Ravens game in Middle River. What do you expect before the game? People are coming in to get their ribs, to get their fried chicken and whatnot." You can find Luke anytime this week out on the practice field. You get an extra day to do that as the Ravens get ready to play the Colts on Monday night. You can find him at Baltimore Luke. Don't forget, this Friday, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour continues to Coco's in Lauraville with our mayor, Brandon Scott. We're looking forward to that. That happens around 3 o'clock. I'll be there around 2, having a crab cake, spending the afternoon in a great neighborhood. I spent a lot of my formative years in that neighborhood right around the corner off Tyndale Avenue with my cousin Nelson. So it'll be good to get back over there, have another crab cake. If you missed Nacho Mama's, all of that is now up at the Baltimore Positive. Had a wonderful chat and afternoon with my dear friend Steve Elliott from the LA Chiropractic Life Center. So that was good fun and rugby conversation. So you won't want to miss that. I am Nestor. We are WNST. Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking about the 3-1 Baltimore Ravens and Baltimore Positive.